Road Trippin' fans, Homage t-shirts are as ferocious as the dunks or bangouts Richard and Channing throw down from time to time, and their softness can't even be matched. Homage has been turning back the clock with throwback tees for years. From the NBA to the Ultimate Warrior, you know, the tee that LeBron wore on the plane after leading the Cavs to its first title the city had seen in over 50 years. Well, Homage tells the stories of triumph, individualism, and hustle, preserving the old school and creating new legacies. Go to homage.com, that's H-O-M-A-G-E, and pay homage with your favorite tee. Be sure to check out the NBA Jam tees and one exclusively made for me and you. Better yet, three other tees designed specific to the Road Trippin' fam you'll want to check out. We're road tripping at homage.com. Welcome into another edition of Road Trippin', Richard versus Channing. I'm your host, Allie Clifton, a little flashback Friday edition. Why? Well, for starters, Devin Harris is now a part of Denver Nation, but when in town as a Dallas Maverick, he sat down with hashtag Team Richard, and things per usual with Richard were loose and fun, but for Devin, it was also a moment of truth and reality. Episode 70, Richard, Katie, Devin, it's all yours.
Thank you, Allie. Yes, Team Richard here. Richard Jefferson, what's going on? We're joined by Katie Wingy. How are you doing, Katie?
I'm so great.
Are you? we know where you're great, Katie.
Back on the pod, baby. Back on.
We're back. And my teammate, twice over, the one and only, Devin Harris. What's going on, Devin?
What's going on, guys? How we doing?
We're chilling. We're here, and you know, most people might not, you know, fully understand, you know, what's going on in the past few days. But I don't know when you guys are going to air this, but no, we're going to timestamp this. The Vikings just had
school.
The Vikings just had a hell of a win, and our one and only Katie is from
Minnesota.
And Devin is from
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
And you are a fan of
the Green Bay Packers.
So when we walk in here, the first thing Kate says is like, "So I've been doing my homework. I really hope that he's a Packers fan." It's like
more than anything.
Like that's like, do you hate to see their success as much as they hate to see your success? Because yes. You guys have had a ton more.
Yes, and the only there was a little bit of. When Brett Favre went to play for them,
that hurt.
It hurt, but also kind of cheered for them a little bit too, because I love Brett Favre so much. But ever since then, I hate them with a passion. Everybody in Wisconsin hates them with a passion. The fact that my teammate Wesley Matthews, who's from Madison, is a Viking fan, just makes me hate him even more. But yeah, just in that game, it hurt me more than it hurt the Saints. I feel like
I can't stop smiling.
No, but okay, so I don't even know the guy's name, but when you're in the middle of one of those moments where you have just one of those moments, like
Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, no, not I'm not talking about the positive side. Everybody's been on the positive side. I'm
getting diggy
about,
with it.
I'm talking about the person on the negative side, like the missed tackle. He was supposed to be the back safety. By the time this airs, I know, you know, there might be a Super Bowl champion at that point in time, but
let's not get carried away.
No, I'm not saying they. I said there might be a Super Bowl champion. We don't know. It won't be that long. But that's got, like, people don't understand how hard it is for us when we make those mistakes, right? That, like, people are, like, living their lives for. People are so focused. Like, it doesn't matter what situation you're in. But your hopes and dreams of your family all rely on that person making that tackle, and he doesn't. And so everywhere he goes, he has to deal with it. He has to listen to it.
He has to explain himself, what he's thinking. You know, he's got to look at his teammates.
He's got to say, I'm sorry, man, so many times.
Well, now in social media, too.
Oh, they got memes already all over. Out.
It's the Prince one. Of the Prince is blocking him from getting dicks. I died.
I have not seen the memes because I haven't been on social media that much, but... Gosh, that's gotta suck.
I can't put it into words. I mean, but the thing is, like, everybody wants to know what he's thinking. I mean, he dives, but like he dives in a way where he's not even close to him. Like,
well, it looked like he was trying to avoid. Has he done an interview?
Yeah, I think he explained himself after the game. I think he was trying to avoid the penalty. He felt like he would have got there early, so he wasn't trying to. If he was coming full speed, he would have hit him
before the ball got there,
and so that would he put just him kind of dive out of the way.
And he thought that somebody else or he would go out of bounds or whatever. Yeah. Sucks. Yeah. Well, someone told me that he was supposed to be the back free safety anyway, so his only job is not to make the tackle, but to let him catch the ball, then tackle him. Or, you know, like that. Travis, our video guy, he said same thing happened the Broncos a couple years back, Broncos Ravens, where a guy goes up, he's supposed to be the back. Instead of just making the tackle, he goes for the interception, misses the ball, they run in and get a touchdown. See, that there's no point in trying to be the hero. Just do your job.
It reminds me of Packers Seahawks.
Okay.
The onside kick.
Yeah.
The guy was supposed to block the guy, so the guy behind him could catch the ball. He tried to catch the ball and didn't. And we ended up losing that game and losing the chance to go to the Super Bowl.
Was he the same person? Like, he made two mistakes. I feel like that guy made two mistakes that day.
I don't want to relive it. I mean,
he did make two mistakes, right?
I do. Yeah. Let's relive it.
No. Tell me, because I remember he had a really bad day. I don't remember what the first mistake was.
I remember the first mistake. So we had threw the ball in the middle of the field, and he caught it. And instead of running to get field goal range, he just, like, went down.
Yeah.
And, like, the 50. And we ended up, like, having to punt and give him the ball back. Well, no, he had another 10
yards to go. Yeah,
he could have ran, and we would have been field game, and the game would have been over. And let me tell you, I can tell you exactly where I was in this game. We were in Memphis. We were at the museum, the Civil Rights Museum.
That's funny because today is Martin Luther King Day.
And wow. I remember I was sitting there with my teammate JJ Barrera. The Patriots had already got to the Super Bowl. We were making plans of going to the Super Bowl. As we're going through the museum, and I'm like, we're looking at flights and like.
Was I there?
I don't know if you were there.
I think I was there because I was only in Dallas 1 year, but that's when the whole team, Carlisle, everybody, I was there.
And then I just remember like walking, and then they're like, oh, we got the ball back in the outside kick. I'm like, no.
And just so everyone knows, before you go to the MLK Museum is awesome, like how it has everything in his room, but there are no TVs there. So we were getting our updates on our phones, right? We were getting our updates on our phones.
Yes, and we have another big Seahawks fan, Al Whitley, and he was just smiling his face, and the fact that we lost that game, it was just it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, those are days. But isn't it funny? We're going to be honest here. As much as fans annoy you, now all of a sudden, like, you're like, I don't want to relive that. Like, isn't it weird to go from, like, fan to professional where now all of a sudden if you miss a free throw tomorrow in a crucial time, people will be cussing you out. And you're like, people, chill out. It's just a game. But
you see both sides of it. You know, as a professional, you know, we are harped on when we, you know, we don't come through in the clutch and, you know, fans get upset with us. But, you know, when it's a different sport, something that we love, I mean, we harp on the guys just as much. But, you know, I think that's what makes it, you know, great about professional sports.
Well, and the other part about it is, like, for us, and I think basketball players in general, we can't cheer for basketball. No. Like, we grew up loving basketball, having a favorite team. The only basketball that we can really kind of talk shit about is college. Yeah. That's it. And, you know, Arizona being so much better than Wisconsin, that makes
right
it
now.
Really tough.
Right now.
That makes it
really tough. Here we go.
No,
the way you started the year off and the way you fired your coach.
Yeah, Sean Miller's not going anywhere. He has the Richard Jefferson stamp of approval, right?
Like, and that means so much.
That means so much when you donate half of your life to a gym, you know? So, I think Sean is doing a great job. But that's part of it. Like, his down year, like, if this is a down year where he has a possible number one pick, bunch of young guys. They played well. They had a bad stretch. Then they won like 8 in a row, including beating Arizona State, which was amazing. They were undefeated and number 2 in the country, and they take them down. So, like, if that's your down year, what are you gonna do?
The year's still early, RJ.
It's not early. We're in January. Yeah. Like, they're done in March.
Months. That's a lot of games.
Still time for the wheels to come on.
Yeah, but that's like saying it's still early for you guys in Dallas.
He went there.
Hey, we are playing better basketball right now.
Are you? You guys are. But you guys whipped our tail. So yeah. I'm not here.
For us, it's just, you know, every game we have is close.
Yeah.
It's just we have a bunch of young guys that we're trying to teach how to close games.
Don't know that feeling.
You know, I mean, I think the last, I want to say, 15 to 18 games we've had have been 5 or 6 points.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just,
you feel it too when a team walks in the building and they kind of like, oh, they've lost four in a row, and it's like, no, we're better than that.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you smack somebody, you guys feel good about yourself, and then you have like a 5-point loss, and you're like, damn it.
Really?
Yeah, you're like, damn it. Oh, yeah, well, I could definitely relate.
Definitely coming in, coach, you know, we won like, you know, let's say we have a little 3-game winning streak, and then we have a team coming in we're technically supposed to beat, you know, have lost four in a row, and you know, have the feeling like, oh, you know, we're playing good right now, we're scoring the ball well. And then it comes down to that last 5 minutes, and then we can't finish it. And then, you know, we got to listen to coach the next day and his great film sessions and his quirky, you know, sayings. And it's just, it's tough. But our young guys, I feel like, are gaining experience with this.
I feel like I'm, like, looking at him, but I'm hearing your words.
Yeah, it's the same thing, because we're both now in that position. And Devin, like myself, like, you go from having a ton of success, improving yourself as a young player, then in the middle of your career being a go-to guy, then, you know, towards the end of your career kind of being a backup mentor. So our roles are very, very similar. And you know, he has been very, very fortunate also, like myself, where he's gone, had a bunch of guys where he can kind of watch, like, okay, this is what Finley did. This is what, you know, X, Y, and Z vet did for me. Like, I just need to reciprocate that. But it still doesn't make it any easier. Like, I'm in that role now. Do you find yourself kind of just like, you feel like you're a dad slash coach slash player?
So we have two young point guards on our team, Dennis Smith Jr. and Yogi Farrell. And both are very talented, but both are very young in this age. We got Yogi last year on a 10-day contract.
He was cooking.
You know, Yogi mania. Yeah. You know, had a ton of success. But then towards the later part of the season, you know, started to learn the hardship of the NBA. You know, all the Yogi mania, then, you know, lost his starting spot, had to come to the bench, you know, and lost some of his playing time, and come in trying to prove himself all over again. And then we had this highly touted draft pick, you know, where we're coming in saying he's going to be, you know, rookie of the year. You know, he's got a 45-inch vertical. But teaching these guys how to play the right way and how to play the point guard position, it's not always fun. I mean, they're young guys that make a lot of mistakes, but what makes it, you know, special for me is that they're willing to learn. Yeah. You know, they're willing to take the steps to become better and hear what I have to say and take to heart. So some days, yeah, it's tough because, you know, you're telling them the same things over and over and over again. But they're also, you also see, like, improvement. Sometimes it's drastic, sometimes it's small, but, you know, you do see improvement.
That is the best part. That is the best part to me, is when you have good young guys. Like Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, Trey Lyles, you know, Juancho, Hermann Gomez, Malik, Jokic. Jokic. Like, all of these guys are such good kids, right? Like, these are guys that I would want on my team. There's not one in the bunch that can kind of steer the other two sideways. There's not, like, this asshole, but he's good. No, they're all legitimately good kids. And that's, I want to say, in my career, I've probably experienced that, like, 2 or 3 times where you have multiple players that are under 24, 25, but they're all good kids just wanting to win and play the right way. You know, one thing that I talked a little bit about with the media today was, they asked, like, what's the generation gap like in this and that. And I was like, well, they all grew up watching me play. But the one thing that I've noticed is that when you have a bunch of young guys, they don't fully understand what it means to compete against each other. Like, we're boys and we all hang out and we go do this. And, well, coach is playing you, coach is not playing me. But it's like, no, you have to understand, like, if it's you versus him, and the only way that it's you versus him to get on that court, every day I'm looking at you like trying to murder you.
Right.
And I don't understand that. Like, for me, in my, like, in college, right? So Jason Terry, who was at Arizona, I know I'm really dating myself, how old everybody is, but Jason Terry was at Arizona, and he had to compete against Mike Bibby, right? Mike Bibby was a better point guard, but JT came off the bench. My year, we had Luke Walton, and so me and him, we were roommates, we came in together. I was a starter, he was, you know, he was the sixth man, but he was a 10-year pro. So that means that some days I would go to practice and he would light me up, post me up, do all this stuff, drop these dimes, coach would be on me. And then I would have to go home with this guy, we'd have to eat our meals together. And then the next day, I would go do the same thing to him because I was pissed off. But it taught me at 17, 18 years old that you can be my best friend, but the minute we get between those lines, if it's between me and it's you, it's definitely going to be me, right? And so I don't necessarily see that consistently with the young guys. Like, do Dennis and Yogi have that type of competitiveness?
They did early on because, you know, in the preseason or summertime workouts, you know, we didn't know who our starting point guard was going to be.
Yeah.
So we saw a lot of that fight. Yeah, you know what I mean? And awesome. It was good to see him pick up. Like, they would go at it.
Yeah.
Now as the season goes on, you know, we named Dennis, you know, point guard, and actually we started them together. You really didn't see it as much.
Yeah.
And now, you know, they kind of play different. But no, I agree with you. Like, you don't see that same competitive fire. Like, I think now, like, the way the NBA is going, you're more likely to see younger guys getting those minutes and the older guys, like, not. And it's not like they don't have to earn it as much.
Yes.
And I feel like, you know, just because we're trying to, you know, develop you, we're just going to give you those minutes to see how you go instead of actually making you go out and earn those minutes against guys every day. And I feel like that's what a gap is.
Yeah, and so I'm glad it's the exact same thing that I said to a point. And it's like they don't understand, like, you can be in your second and third year and those minutes are just gifted to you because they want you to develop, but you get a sense of entitlement, mm-hmm. right? So the minute those minutes go away, all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, coach ain't playing. And it's like, well, dude, you really didn't do anything to earn those minutes, right? And that's not, and it's like you're trying to mentor these guys at the same point in time, making them understand that, like, yo, you have to go out there and compete, right? I remember, so we had one of our young players, like, and we were playing one-on-one. And he didn't want to play one-on-one, right? He wanted to go and play like 3-on-3 full court. And he was like, well, I just don't waste. Like, nah, y'all are just, it just, it becomes a post-up game and did this. And it's like, yeah. But 90% of the teams in the NBA switch 1-4.
Yes.
And literally that night, I saw Gary Harris, who, you know, has been an amazing player this year, probably our best, most consistent player. I saw him having to guard 4 men on the block. And so I looked at the young guy on my left, and I'm like, this is why we play one-on-one.
Who was
and
the young guy?
I don't like to call out names, Malik Beasley. And I was like, this is why we play one-on-one. So you get used to guarding bigger players in the post. So when you get into the game and coach says we're switching 1-4, you're not out there blind, right? And it's just understanding. It's like, yes, you're going to get your lumps. You're going to get your head beat in. Mm-hmm. But within getting your head beat in, if you have good coaching and good vets, it puts you in a position to learn something so that when you get into the game, you can be successful.
No, I couldn't agree more, because I'm the guy that has to guard 1-5. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm trying to teach the young guys post-defense, you know, when you get in a certain position, like, don't just let the guy walk you down. Like, fight him early. Like, all these things in the game. So when you get in the game, you can be successful. We're not giving up these buckets late game, because obviously I'm not in late game. Yeah. You're in the late game. So we don't give up these buckets, and we can come out with some of these wins. But, you know, it's something like I have to teach while trying to do it myself and get, like, learn from what I'm doing and understand how I'm doing it so you can be successful at it too. But, you know, it's like I said, it's
and
like
they're so lucky they're good kids, right? Because that's the funniest thing is that, like, some of the times, like, you get these vets, they're not all vets aren't nice guys.
No. Nope.
Right? Because it's like, if it's between me and a young kid, just some vets, not myself. If it's between me and some young kid for 15 minutes, I've seen players take guys out and get them drunk. I've seen guys take them out and, like, party with them. I've seen guys like, yeah, man, that's messed up. Coach ain't playing you. Just full on messing with their heads, because, like, you have to understand what is on the line. Like, people try and make it seem like this. There's some, like, unwritten code. There are millions of dollars at stake. If I don't get a job next year, or if I do get a job next year, that's $2.5 million more dollars that I get to help feed my family over the course of the rest of my life. Right? So if I teach this guy too much and I'm too chummy with him, right, and all of a sudden he gets the job and I don't, or if I'm a dick and I can kind of steer him the wrong way and be like, coach, man, I can't believe this guy is, you know, this guy keeps doing this type of stuff, right? Like, that's the stuff that goes on.
That's so messed up.
Yeah, but it's just, you're talking about millions of dollars at stake, and it's not something that people fully understand. So it's that fine line of, like,
it's that business line of making a business decision. Yeah. Like you said, vets aren't always, you know, good vets.
They're not always nice.
They're not always good vets. Well,
think about it in just a business perspective too, like, not a basketball job, and like a real world job.
Yeah.
I'm sure that it's very similar when you put that kind of hat on it. It's like, okay, I kind of get where that is coming from.
Yeah.
Then trying to move up the corporate ladder.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, and that's what one thing that people see is that you got to have vets on the team, because you need guys to understand what it is to compete every day, to go hard every day. But, you know.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Go ahead.
I'm curious because both of you now have mentioned that there's not a lack of competitiveness, but this younger generation does not have that same competitive fire. Like, why do you think that is? What's changed? What's shifted in the NBA?
You want?
I got lots of opinions. That's why I got podcasts. So you go ahead.
I don't know if it starts early on. I know we talk about the AU circuit a lot, and the brand of basketball that's coming up. And like I said, I think, you know, the NBA just value more draft picks now. I mean, you see a lot of the 14, 15 spots are more like two-way players now, as opposed to, like, you know, 14, 15-year vets. And it's less vets on the team. And like you said, they care more about developing young players. And, you know, a lot of these teams aren't really competitive. So they're all, a lot of teams are rebuilding phases. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're building for the future. And I feel like when they build for the future, obviously winning is not as high up on the list as it should be.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think a lot of it started when we were still in college. I think it might have changed right around your year. There was this one and done thing, right? If you went to college, you went to college because you wanted to go. Like, I played in college 3 years and have played 17 years in the NBA. Don't tell me that you don't want to go to college for more than 1 year because it'll devalue you and your class. No, you go to college because you learn how to play. You go to college because you know how to play in a big game. You know to tell, when you're a junior, you can tell a freshman, like, yo, when we go to Oregon, it's gonna be tough. Make sure you get your rest. Make sure you're locked in. So you have these experiences. You get these kids now that go to school for 1 year. They go to halfway decent schools. They average 25. They show up on a place. They're the fifth pick. And they haven't done shit. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I part of the reason why I was so blessed and so fortunate, even my first 2 years with the Nets, and we went to the finals, but I had just come off of 3 years in college. Jason Collins had also been in 4 years of college. We had both been number one seeds. We had both gone to the Final Four. We were experienced guys. So when we get to the Nets, yes, they have two rookies playing in the NBA Finals, but we were 21 years old. We were 22 years old. We had played in big games, conference championships, you know, NCAA Finals. So we were able to contribute to good teams, right? And I was the 13th pick. He was like the 22nd pick, I think. But now it's just not the same. People want to go to college. You go to college for 1 year. You don't even have to win. You don't have to go to the NCAA tournament. Yeah. If you average 22 points as a freshman, you are a top 15 pick. And if you're a top 20 pick and no one expected you, you better go, right? Because they think every year you stay in college, now you're going to devalue yourself. So you just look at it from a competitive standpoint there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not nearly as competitive.
Okay, so will it recycle then? Like, what happens when these younger players become vets?
Oh, God help us. God help us. That you're going to see a change.
You can't rebuild forever, you know what I mean?
You look at Philly's situation. I mean, they have draft pick after draft pick after draft pick after draft pick. And, you know, series of losing seasons. And just now they're starting to get some vets in, so you're starting to see a little bit of change and then winning some games now. But, like, you go there as a young player, you don't know who's teaching you.
Exactly.
And, you know, we got Nerlens last year in a trade, and just the habits that he had coming over, like, he didn't know, you know, the proper things to do. So we're trying to, you know, teach this guy as a three-year player who's supposed to have some kind of knowledge of what to do, you know, how to work. And, you know, it was tough because he had nobody to teach him, you know, the right way to do things.
Yeah. It's so funny. And that's not to knock young players. It's not their fault, but it's just, I believe that kids should be able to come out of high school or go straight to the pros. Whatever you want, right? Or come out of high school or go to college. Because if you go to college, it's because you want to be there. You're enjoying your time. And it's fine. You were in school, what, 2 years?
Three.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
and almost stayed four. I really, really wanted to stay for my senior year.
I have one of my guys, and you're like this. I have one of my boys, right, who could have left. He could have left after his junior year, and he was a redshirt. So he goes, I was like, dude, what are you doing? They got you projected like top 25. Dude, this was your fourth year. Like, just leave. He was like, Richard, do you know what I have going on down here? And I was like, you know what? You're right. You enjoy that. But that's the thing. It's like you don't have to be in school 1 year. Here, what year is this for you?
14.
You have 14. You have 17. We both were in school 3 years. Like, don't tell me that you have to go to school for 1 year and then you have to get out to do. You're physically not ready. Mentally not ready. And that's different with a high school kid, because a high school kid, you are committing 3 to 4 years to just mentally and physically developing. But a 1 year guy in school is the exact same shit. It's that they were like, well, you went to college, so we expected you to learn something.
But they really didn't go to college. They only had to go one semester, and then they stopped going the second semester. And let's be honest, they're after March, I mean, they're doing NBA workouts in April. You know what I mean? They're not in school anymore. So.
Oh, my God.
Did you want to stay because of Madtown? Was it because of the – what made you want to stay at Madtown for another year? Or for all 3 years, really?
Well, 3 years – I mean, I just – it just got better for me each year. You know, I came in kind of as a shy kid, not really knowing what to expect.
You?
Oh yeah, I was coming. I mean, new environment. You know, you got 55,000.
You know, I could tell this because the way that your face lit up when I started taking you around New York.
No doubt. And it's just like every year I got a little bit more acclimated. You know, making more friends, and then after my junior year, like, you know, I was like the man on campus, you know, coming back to a team that we were going to be a really, really good team. I think they didn't make an Elite Eight without me.
I believe it.
Hey, we would have went to 5-4. I was still there. And just, you know, I had some roommates that were great. And I was really looking forward to my senior year. But, you know, my mom looked at me and she said, you going to be the fifth pick? You know, top 5 pick? You're going. Whether you want to or not, you're going.
A top 5 pick is a tough one to pass up. A top 5. But the good thing about it, and, you know, I used to tell, like, our former GMs, like, Ed Stefanski, Rod Thorne, because we were, you know, with the Nets, we were always, like, my 6 years there. We never had, well, maybe 1 year we had a high, like, a pick in the lottery.
Marcus, right?
Yeah, something like that. But most of the time we had picks that were 23 and above. And I'd be like, why don't you guys go and get a junior or a senior? Go get a guy that's really, really good that is going to get passed up on because people think he's too old, because he's going to show up here and know how to play. He's going to show up here and been through some of the fights. But you're going to bring in a freshman point guard and have to develop this guy. And Jay Kidd and myself are both pushing 30. And you're going to bring in a guy that you're going to develop for 3 years. Bring in a guy that knows how to play, even if he can just contribute a little bit. Right? And, you know, that shows you how much that worked out.
Richard, have you been to UW-Madison before?
I have not been to Madison.
I would, like, maybe call it the Arizona State of the Midwest.
See, everyone says Wisconsin's one of the big party schools.
It's a fun place to be.
Tell me more about your
I wanted to go there. I wanted to play there so bad. That was my number one choice. Uh-huh. And I had tore my ACL my junior year of high school, so my college plans changed a lot. But
where's that campus going?
Illinois State.
Okay.
Missouri Valley.
Okay.
So you're all just Midwest people, yeah.
We are. And you know what? We have values, Richard. You can learn from us. We have good Midwestern values.
Yes, you do. And being a father of how many girls?
Three?
Why it's do not you such a bad thing.
No, it isn't. But he
knows what I'm doing. He knows what he's doing.
He's doing it on purpose.
What on purpose? So me and Devin, people, you know, we've been friends for years. We were friends before you even came to the Nets. And being a father myself, right, we've always, you know, just joked about having boys and blah, blah, blah. And I've been so, so fortunate. I have two beautiful, healthy boys, Phoenix and Lil Rich.
You make it seem like he's less fortunate because he has three little girls.
No, because I know my guy. I know my guy, and I know how much he wanted a little boy, right?
I did. But I love my girls, though. I will say that. I mean,
This is not to knock little girls out there.
But I think every father wants a son. I mean,
and every mother wants a daughter.
Yeah, and you know, after one, after two, you know, you keep trying, and you know, we got our third, and after that, I was like, you know, three is enough for me, so.
So Jason Terry, how many girls did he have?
I think he has five or six.
Jason Terry was the same way, where he went and did like the procedures.
Yeah, we did in vitro to try to control the sex.
Wow,
but
it's commitment right there.
Yeah,
it was. They just kind of, you only really make girls, Dev.
That's
on you too.
It's on me.
It's 100%. It's not about what you want. It's all on you.
All on me. And
so you guys did in vitro. So we
on the third
on the third one. Mm-hmm. So we went to dinner in Dallas, and your wife was like, you don't understand how hard this shit is, right? So I don't know. I don't know. Because I have two boys now, and so she wants a girl. And I'm done. I'm ready to be done with kids. Every time I say this publicly, she gets mad at me, right?
From two to three is a big jump. Yeah. I mean, one to two is like a big jump, but like two to three is like...
Yeah, you go from man to man to zone. Yeah. Exactly. Right? You got to go zone defense. Yes. Right? You got to guard an area. You're not guarding one-on-one. Exactly. Is it a really, really tough process?
In vitro?
Yeah.
It's tough on her. Yeah. It's definitely tough on her. I mean, it's more hormones within the body. Not natural.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of weight gain that they do because of the medicine that they're taking. Shots. It's multiple shots on a daily basis.
She must love you.
Or she just really wanted dirt. But it was a hard process, and we did two cycles.
Yeah.
And it was just.
And every time it spun, it was a boy.
So we had I think the first she had limited eggs too, which we found out. Uh-huh. So I think the first batch, I think it was nine healthy girls and like one boy.
Oh.
And then the second batch was like, I think it was eight healthy girls and then one boy. But none of the boys were healthy.
God, what is going on with your sack, man? Do you need to switch it up or something?
I'm just being punished for earlier life.
Transgressions?
Yes, I'm just being punished.
Wow, you had eight healthy girls and you're looking at these numbers like this is not even fucking 50-50.
No, it's not.
This is...
And yeah.
Kings have murdered their wives.
And I'm thinking, I'm asking a doctor, right? am I capable of kids? It was like, well, yeah, like you wouldn't be able to have kids at all if you weren't able to make both.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that you...
are predominantly...
girls. I mean, and it's like a coin flip. You know, sometimes you get tails 10 times before you get a heads. And this just happens.
So it's really not a 50-50 chance.
It's not, but they make it seem that way.
So I tell my wife all the time. She goes, well, I just really want a girl, right? And I was like, look, we took what God gave us.
Sounds so much like you. I can't.
No, it's true. Because so she wants a girl, right? And she, her relationship with her mother wasn't great. So like she really wants to have like that relationship. My relationship with my father, I had an amazing stepdad, John. Shout out. We actually named my second son like has his first name. Mm-hmm. It's like that's my guy. You know, raised me since I was like 7 years old. Like that's my dad. And so, you know, I didn't have a great relationship until later in life with Big Richard. And so
you're a junior?
Yeah.
And there's a junior now.
Junior. Wow. Yeah. Vic Damone, junior. So you want a boy and blah, blah, blah. You want that relationship. But, you know, so she's like, well, we can do like testing. I'm like, well, babe, testing doesn't guarantee. Because you know what it'd be like if all of a sudden I got eight healthy boys and one. I can't wait to use your numbers in my favor.
Yeah. But then, you know, at the end of the day, so we're looking at it, you know. And she's like, well, what do you want to do? I was like, well, obviously, I'm just good with the two. She's like, no, I'm in pregnancy mode. Like, we're going to do this one way or the other. So it was like, okay, well, we're going to just leave these eggs to freeze. And then we're going to do it the natural way, just however way.
Is that what you did?
Yeah. And
you knew what that was going to be, the natural way? Had one healthy boy?
No, it was no healthy. Like, the embryos weren't healthy. The boys weren't healthy.
Okay.
Because we actually tried to input those, and they didn't take. And then, you know, another thing, too, about the shot, they make it really emotional.
Oh,
so emotional level was
I was going to ask about that with the extra hormones.
That was, that's got to be
fun. So, and the fact that I was like, okay, babe, well, we tried, you know, we got the two. I'm good with that. No.
Bless her heart.
Because she's like, I've been through all this, I need a baby.
Right. I'm like,
you put a baby in me now.
I'm like, who am I? I can't. You know, I'm like, all right, she's crying. I'm like, okay. All right. Well,
that's how they always get you. Yeah. They start crying. All right, here, all have right, this baby.
Here we go. All right, we'll do it. We'll do it the natural way.
Let me just say, though, too, there are very few things more sacred and special than like a good daddy-daughter relationship.
My bad. And he's experienced that three times over.
But there's it really is. Like, I'm so close with my dad. Like, he's my person. And I wouldn't give that up for anything. And I don't feel like very many people have that.
Person is a Milwaukee state. Not Milwaukee. Is a Minnesota statement.
Is it?
Yes. I know. It is a Minnesota statement. Like, I've heard other people from Minnesota be like, you know, yeah, like, no, that's my person. Right? It's not like, it's just, it's a term of endearment. right? Yeah. I'm just recognizing that. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to interrupt
you. Just trying to take away from my sentimental moment talking about daddy-daughter relationships.
No,
thank
but
you. You wouldn't understand that, would you?
I don't understand.
No, I agree. I have a special relationship with all my kids, and we do different stuff, and we relate different ways. But when I look at like how well my girls behave in public, and then I see these boys terrorizing their moms in the mall, it makes me love them just a little bit more. So.
I look forward to that. I took little Richard to his first hockey game, and he went to the Avs game, and he was having a good time. But he just, you know, boys just see things from a different perspective. You constantly have to tell him to be nice to his little brother. Like, and I had two older brothers, so I was the youngest of three, and it's just like I grew bigger than, you know, both of my brothers very quickly. So we like when we, I was like my oldest brother is like 17. Then I have another one that was, you know, I'm talking about when we were like the same height. And so I was like probably like 11. Then I had another one that was 13. And we were all the same height. And then it just kind of started tilting on them. But yeah, no. From that standpoint, dude, like boys and the way we play and see the world is
so rough.
Very destructive.
So very rough.
And I contribute to that fully. I contribute to that with my little guys. Like, I pick them up and throw them on the couch. And they're like, do me again. Pick them up, throw them on the couch, like just wherever the pillows are. Because that's as a dad, that's the only way to make them tough. So I'm like punching him one time. And he goes, no, daddy, don't do that. And I was like, what? He's like, we don't hit, daddy. And I was like, you're right. I want to argue with you right now because I thought I was playing with you. But you can't play like that with your brothers, you know.
See, I'm teaching my girls to hit.
My oldest plays
basketball. My middle one, she takes boxing, and she's really like, Dad, is this how you punch? I'm like, no, like lock the wrist up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we don't condone that. One of the most underreported domestic violence issues is women on men. I'm just saying that.
I'll tell you a funny story. So as I'm teaching her, you know, how to punch the correct way, she got pushed down on the playground. And she came home and said, Daddy, you know, this boy, he pushed me down. He punched me in the stomach. I said, what'd you do? She said, I got up and I decked him.
Oh.
That a girl.
Yeah. You're like, that a girl.
But we don't hit, but that a girl.
And you told him your last name was Smith as you were walking away, right? Right? You told him your last name was Smith.
Yeah, so I got a phone call from, you know, from the teacher. Yeah, Scarlett had a little bit of a scruffle on the playground today. I'm like, oh, what happened? Like, oh, well, this boy kind of pushed her down. I'm like, what'd she do? It's like, yeah, she kind of hit him in the face. I'm like, yeah.
Kinda. But isn't that one of like, so, you know, and I want to talk about, you know, your brother who, you know, I knew very, very well just from all those years. And, you know, you can, you know, tell us, you know, as much or as little as you want. But, you know, he was at every game. He was, you know, everywhere. And, you know, I asked you before if we could talk about it. And, you know, I found out from Marcy, mm-hmm. right, who had sent me that. She sent me this text, like, first thing in the morning. And Marcy, one of our really, really good friends, that she was at Arizona right before me. She moved to New York, so she became like my den mother. She became my mom when I first got to New York, and then I introduced her to you on my way out of New York, and she just took care of you.
Yeah.
And you know, so she sent me that text and was just like, yo, well, you know, what happened? Like, because I don't know, because again, you read an ESPN article or you hear something and people don't really fully understand about, you know, what happened with your brother.
So, you know, obviously, like you say, he came to every game. I believe it was the second home game of the season. It might have been the first. It was the first home game of the season. You know, he's there, of course. And it was a Wednesday night. So, obviously, yeah. You know, that means going to candle room after the game. And, you know, he had this love for these old school cars. As much as I told him, you know,
no airbag,
yeah,
nothing.
None of this stuff. You know, he's like, these cars are made of steel. You know, I'm like, yeah, but not when the car's going, you know, 60. But anyway, you know, he comes to the game, goes to candle after the game, and he's driving home, and apparently they were having some car trouble with this car before. It's been to the shop a couple of times, ended up dying on the highway. An electrical error or something in the engine, completely died. And from what I know, and I still am collecting facts, so they're just kind of in the car on the highway.
How many people were?
Just two, him and his friend in the front seat. And apparently on 75, there's kind of a hill where you're kind of coming up and then, you know, kind of coming down. And it was a car, it's like 3:30 in the morning, didn't really see them there, ended up rear-ending them going about 75. I don't believe he was wearing a seatbelt, and ended up just, you know, smushing them against the the windshield and, you know.
Did so were they off to the side or they were still?
No, they were in like the third lane.
So, oh, they were on the third lane on the far left.
Yeah, they were on the far left. Not quite off the, you know, the, I don't know what you call the safety lane whatever, but just kind of just waiting for
assistance.
Yeah.
And ended up getting rear-ended and ended up dying from the injuries.
So they were, and he might have been like no seatbelt because he gets out of the car or
I, you know, that part you'll never know. Yeah. And believe it or not, I got the actual, there were two cops that drove by the car and they were actually on their way
coming back around
to help them out when the accident happened. And it was just, you know, a little too late.
Did they know? Well, so it wasn't just a bad.
Yeah, the guy that they hit him, you know, was completely sober, so it wasn't like, you know, he was taxing. But it was the way the hill comes up. You just weren't able to see.
When you come down, all of a sudden.
Yeah, and you can't see them, and no lights at that point, and end up just, you know, running right into the car.
Man, you know that you know, I've been through, you know, a lot of stuff, you know, with teammates, right, and just. You know, understanding, you know, again, there's just, it's just basketball, what we do.
Yeah.
But it's just like knowing your brother and seeing and being, you know, he had been in every game all the time in Dallas. You know what I'm saying?
He was a guy like everybody knew, you know, he went out a lot. He enjoyed life. You know, he would just pop up to random places. You know, he'd pop up to Denver. He was like, hey, well, I just need two tickets tonight. How did you even get here? Yeah. He was like, well, you know, I had some extra miles, you know, San Francisco was another city he used to pop up in. He enjoyed Toronto.
And another thing is that he, like you say, he would pop up, but he would just say hello and then keep it moving.
Yeah, he would like, you know, he wasn't like, you know, he'd want to hang around.
Yeah, he'd like, yo, do you want to sit at the table? What are you doing?
No, I'm going
to go by the bar. Yeah, I'm going to go by the bar.
He did his own thing. You know, he was great that way. You know, he supported me, but he also gave me space too. And I miss him. It was, you know, a tough little stretch to go through. You know, he had a 9-year-old son and a 6-month-year-old son that, you know, just came into the world. And seeing those guys.
Well, those are your two little boys now.
They are my boys.
Yeah, those are your boys now.
And just it's been tough, but
gave me the chills.
Yeah,
it's the toughest because the only time I saw him really was at the gym. So every game that I see, you know, walking by the Jack Daniels bar. That was where, that's where he was.
Yeah.
And just not seeing him, it's just, you know, it's been tough.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You talk about, or you have talked about, just when it becomes bigger than basketball, how great this league is, it's coming together, and this band of brothers. How much has that helped you?
Well, I can't imagine how many people reach out to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll first say, you know, my owner, you know, coming to the hospital, Mark. Sitting with me when we got the news from the doctor saying that, you know, he there was no coming back for him, and him being there with me through that time was you know, he didn't have to do that. And then teammates showing up at the hospital, showing their support, you know, coaches, and then the text that I got from, you know, everybody, you know, guys that I played with, guys that I haven't played with, and it's all that fraternity of everybody, kind of, you don't know everybody, but you know everybody, and, you know, in that situation, that helps you get over a lot of things that you're dealing with, knowing that you have that kind of support.
Yeah.
Even just being on the road and seeing the support from teams that you're about to go to battle with on the floor and seeing those guys come together. Yeah. I know the moment that stands out to me is, you know, Steph Curry, and that was a very talked about moment. But
yeah, that was I've been really good friends with Sean Livingston. We came to the draft together. We've been, you know, really close. I spent some time with him with his injuries, and you know, so that kind of made us closer. And we kind of just talked about, you know, he's like, what can I do for you? And at that moment, I was thinking about, you know, my 9-year-old nephew, loves Steph Curry. They were coming to town soon, so I'm like, if you could, you know, set this up, and just for him to just spend a little time with them, that would be great. It's done. And I wasn't expecting, you know, what happened to have happened, but, you know, Steph was great. He took him off to the side, took him in the locker room, and I didn't see him for like 30 minutes, but he came back like almost like a different person. Like, it kind of got him out of his rut a little bit, and he, you know, forgot about the situation that he was in, losing his dad. And I think it's helped him bounce back a lot quicker than he would have. And I can, you know, I can never thank Steph for that.
And that's literally in those situations, because we all know how fortunate we are, you know. We know how fortunate we are to have brothers. We know how fortunate we are to be in this league. And so if you can have an opportunity to, you know, again, everyone, he might not have known your brother, but he's known another 100 brothers like yours.
Right.
Right. And obviously his relationship with Sean, and then, you know, just knowing you in this league, you know, for Steph to, you know, take a 9-year-old boy, you know, whose uncle was in the NBA, and take him in the locker room and spend some time with him. Like, those are the things that, like, for me, like, those are the things that give me chills, right? Mm-hmm. Because I know how good of a guy Steph is. Like, Steph's all time, right? He's funny, he's chill, nicest guy in the world. Like, I hated playing against him when we were in Cleveland, right? But I loved playing. As a teammate, he was great. But, like, those are the things that within the fraternity that you don't see very, very often of a guy that, you know, and again, any player would have done that. Bron would have done that.
Absolutely.
You know, and the fact that he was the person that was the chance for, you know, to connect, and obviously your relationship with Livingston helped set that up, right? Because if you don't know Chris Paul, if you don't know one of these guys, and it's like you're kind of searching, you're like, I want to do this, but, you know, I also compete against the guy, you know, but you're my little guy, anything I can do to help you,
right?
You know?
And, you know, it takes you a little bit out of your comfort zone, but like I said, it was more about him at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was going to do whatever it took to kind of, you know, to see that smile that you needed to have.
Yeah, that's awesome. So shout out to Steph, you know, for doing that. And I know everybody does some things over the course of, you know, their career for charities and stuff. But when you can kind of help a kid that is in your fraternity, you know, that's something that's special, man. And you know, I can't believe we're giving compliments to Steph Curry on this thing. Jeez,
well, like, he needs more compliments.
Yeah, what is this podcast coming to?
But Devin, too, your strength is very admirable.
Yeah.
Especially being able to step back on the floor and knowing how much is associated with your brother.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, at that point, it it's our safe haven.
Yeah.
You know, be able to take my mind off of it for that 2 hours. And my coach has been great because he can see me kind of drifting off. Like, when I'm in the game, like, I'm in the game. When I'm out of the game, you know, I'm in the stands. You know,
he is the king. Richard is the king of that.
Well, no, and he told me I hadn't played for months, right? I hadn't played for months.
To keep it in
so I was throwing Tic Tacs to fans, right? We had this bin right next to we had this bin full of, like, candy right next to, like, the scores table. And so our trainer, Dan puts it up, the stuff up there. But it's, like, Tic Tacs, mints, gum, like, candy, Jolly Ranchers. So, like, every time, like, my New Year's resolution was to not eat any more of that candy, right? Every time I go up and grab candy and I would just toss it to fans. I'm, like, throwing it at people's heads, like, hitting Jolly Ranchers to people third, fourth row. Because I was on another planet, right?
I'm thankful for that resolution.
Yeah.
I get your candy.
Yeah, he could see, you know, when I was just off into the thing. He was like, hey, when you're here, I need you to be here. When you're not, you can be wherever you want to be. But just when you're on the court, I need you here.
I got to give a shout out to Rick, too, like the support that he gave to Luke, you know, during that situation that he was going through. Because it was so – we, again, a part of this fraternity, we know how childish and how many distractions there are. And I think Rick did a really good job and We talked a little bit about it. I love Rick. Rick is an acquired taste. He's an acquired taste.
He is. And for me, he actually, it gets better with age.
It does.
You understand him a little bit better because, you know, he frustrates you sometimes, but, like, you know, he's a smart guy. He's a quirky guy, but, you know, he has your back.
To say the least.
He's great. But, no, his support, I mean, and he takes his coaching brotherhood very seriously. And
yeah.
The support for Luke and
those moments are
tough.
Well, and it was like, you know, Popovich came out, a lot of guys came out.
Stan Van Gundy,
all these guys. And that's what you have to do. It doesn't matter. Luke is a former player, but all of a sudden when the coaches felt, you know, one of theirs, you know, being unjustly criticized. Because they're, as players, as coaches, we're all going to face a ton of criticism. But when there's criticism that's unjustified and unwarranted and opinion-based and then carries weight because of, you know, the media attention that comes with it. Now all of a sudden, you know, that's the time for people to step in. Yeah. You know,
I agree, and I think, you know, like I said, being in LA doesn't help.
Does not help being in LA. It happens right after Big Bogut leaves. what if Big Bogut, Andrew Bogut, who is one of the more outspoken guys, a great NBA guy too. He's one of those vets that you need in your locker room.
Absolutely. I think everybody needs an Andrew Bogut.
Everybody needs an Andrew Bogut because, you know, he is one of those guys that, you know, it doesn't matter who it is. Media, training staff, coaches, he'll say what is on his mind. So for that to kind of coincide with him being released, you know, that was a tough tough one.
Yeah, I think they dodged a bullet with that one.
They definitely dodged a bullet because there would have been some, there would have been, as much as there were quotes, you know, on one end, there would have definitely been quotes in that locker room just from a, and I say this in a very respectful way, because he is definitely a 7 foot alpha, right? definitely mentally, he is a 7 foot alpha. Like he will tell you what's on his mind
and very opinionated.
Yeah,
as well.
Very opinionated and in the right way. But
how do you guys think that Kobe would be handling the whole LA situation?
What do you mean, like as a coach in this situation?
As a player. He was still playing with the Lakers.
Right now? Oh. No, I think things would have been
a lot different. I don't think this the media and the circus around it would happen a different way.
Yeah. You don't the Kobe to his credit. Good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
When Kobe was in that franchise, it was about Kobe.
Yeah.
Right. Anything that was sideways or it was about Kobe. You know, Paul Pierce talked about how he doesn't want anybody else at his jersey retirement. He doesn't want, you know, a tribute video to Isaiah Thomas because that's about him. Where that was kind of like the whole season for the Lakers when it was Kobe, or just in general. Like when it was there, it was Kobe. I heard a story, and I don't know if it was true. I'm gonna say it's true, right? That after Shaq got traded, right, they were playing. I think Miami might have been playing the Clippers, like the next night. So Shaq comes to the Laker game, right? Sits courtside, and all of a sudden they show him on the big screen. They do the Superman. They play the Superman song, and the crowd gives Shaq a standing ovation. And then Shaq like waves and leaves. They said Kobe was so hot. He was so hot in that moment, right? Because it was just like, look, he was no longer there. He didn't want to be Shaq's sidekick. He got tired of being a Robin. And all of a sudden, and Shaq knew what he was doing.
Oh,
he knew. He knew that if he came and sat courtside for 2 minutes, they were going to put him on the camera and he was going to get a standing O. And they played the Superman song too, which is, hey. So I just, you know, one of my boys was like, yo, like Kobe was so hot. He's like, the first thing we did was look over at Kobe to see how he's going to react. And he was fuming, right? Oh, no, that it was just, it's a different monster when you're in LA and you have to accept that and you understand that. You know, for Luke, who played there 9 years, won 2 championships, played in, I think, 3 or 4 NBA finals. Like, he knows the circus. Like, he, you know, you have to have a special person to understand it. And I think he's in a good spot for that.
And, you know, to go back to Kobe, you know, when he says all about Kobe, I think a tribute to him, he made it that way because he knew he could handle it.
100%.
You know what I mean? Whether it was good, bad, or ugly, you know, when they were winning 19 games or when they were winning championships, he could handle it either way, with the media, with the fans, and I think that's what made him, you know, part of great.
That's what made him great. Yeah, that's what made him great. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, it would have been handled differently because it's like, no, Kobe, this is about him, right? This is about his journey and where he's going to take the franchise. So he might be banged up. He might be 40. This might be his 20th year. But we are going to ride this guy out till he's ready to say goodbye, right? And so, you know, from the Paul Pierce standpoint, I kind of understand it a little bit. At the same point in time, you know, I think it's a little different, right? When you see, you know, hey, I would evaluate what Isaiah did for the franchise before I talk about it. Playing with the hip, sister passing away, mm-hmm. as you can relate to.
Absolutely.
So you do this and you still go out there and play and you do all this other stuff. And now all of a sudden, like, I can't go and get a hand wave for 10 seconds because it's your jersey retirement. Like, after all that, like, you can relate.
Yeah.
More than probably anybody in the NBA. If Dallas were to trade you and it were to come back and be Dirk's retirement jersey night, and you're showing up, I'm asking. This is the question. This is a legitimate.
No, I get it.
And I'm saying during a timeout in the first quarter, they just want to give a 10-second, 20-second video to like thank Devin Harris for how many years have you been with Dallas?
Nine
years of service. Thank you, Devin Harris.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can see that. I mean, because, you know, you give a lot to a franchise, and you know, it's their way of showing, you know, their support, whether it's a, you know, 20-second video. And it just happens to be on a night where, you know, some other things are going on. And, you know, with Kobe, you know, he spent 20 years in one team. You know, Paul Pierce, you know, he got traded, played for two, you know, two, three other teams. But, you know, when you think of Boston, you think of Paul Pierce. And I mean, I can understand both sides of it now. Yes,
This generation. Let's not disrespect the legacy.
Well, no, I'm saying, but when you think of Paul Pierce, like, you think about his time with the Celtics.
When you think about Paul Pierce, you think about the Celtics. Let's not go back that way. Undefeated versus him in the playoffs.
So I can understand, you know, beat them twice. But also, you know, Isaiah did, you know, bring them kind of back to their glory days as well. So
yeah, he helped establish what is now trending there.
Absolutely.
You know, with people wanting to play there, understand that Gordon Hayward signed there to play with Isaiah Thomas, right?
And Brad Stevenson.
No, and Brad Stevenson. But I'm saying, like, when you're looking at the coach, you're also looking at the situation of players that are there. So he's there, and it's like, look, I'm playing with one of the best guards in the league. You know, you have all these guys and what's going on. Yes. And now something happens and Kyrie goes there and they're playing great. Obviously, Gordon gets injured or whatever. But at the end of the day, July 1st, the team that he was looking at
had IT
as their best player.
Right.
And he was coming to be a part of that. And truth be told, I am a big fan of Gordon. I know you are too.
Absolutely.
Gordon is all time. I get on him all the time about how good he can be. But IT was going to be the best player on that team, right? IT was going to be the leading scorer on that team.
Yeah.
Because Gordon does so much.
Yeah, he does
defense,
around player.
Yes. All around player. Mm-hmm. So it's not a disrespect, but it's like in that fourth quarter, that ball was going to be in IT's hand.
Without a doubt.
And they were going to go how IT went, yes. Right? So that's not a disrespect to G, because he knows how much I respect his game. But that's what I'm saying. He helped bring that franchise to where they were. He helped carry them to the spot of, we are a great team with a ton of picks because of Danny Ainge. Mm-hmm. So what Danny Ainge did. So it was like, I don't ever speak for anybody, but that beef between him and Danny, and, you know, it's just there was an emotional aspect that Isaiah brought to the game.
Absolutely. And you know, I felt a little bit, you know, when the first time I got traded, I mean, I think it's, you know, when you're in a spot where you want to be and you're looking at the success that you're having, and then, you know, you get sent somewhere else, it's tough. I mean, I can understand that.
Oh, yeah. We both did that. but you going from Dallas
to New Jersey.
But if the writing was on the wall, because Jay Kidd basically forced us.
No, but, like, to go through that media circus for 3 months?
Yeah. But I agree. But, well, for me, I went from fucking Jersey to Milwaukee. Shoot me.
He's from Milwaukee. How are you going to?
And he knows. That's why I was like, shoot me. Like, he sent, he sent me a text because we were playing on this. We were both on the Nets, and he sent me a text. And he was like, it's going to be okay, man. and the truth be told, and this is how much of a dick he is, right? So he's an all-star the next year, right? Him and Vince are all-star. They were balling, right? He averaged like 20-something games. They played really great. They had a great start, whatever. And so he's an all-star. And I was like, man, that's such bullshit. He's like, yeah, but if you still be here, I probably wouldn't be an all-star. I'm like, thanks, dickhead. Thanks.
You demanded assists from me, not scoring.
I told you that the second all-time leading assist guy in the NBA was Jay Kidd, and he had more assists to me than anybody else. Yes. So if you wanted assist, I'm your guy.
And I think I came with the next game and had like 19 assists.
I'm telling you, because I don't dribble. If you throw me the ball, it's going up or to the hoop.
No, but that's not going to get me to the All-Star game.
You got to the All-Star game.
By scoring.
You did. You got to the All-Star game, you and Vince, and then the next year.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still tell Rock doing that. So Rod Thorne, we're taking NBA fans back, but Rod Thorne texts me after he trades me. So I get traded for Bobby Simmons and Yi Zhaoyin, right? Guys that I've played more in since then than both of them. And he's like, man, Rich, because you had Brooke. Mm-hmm. You had Brooke as a rookie. He's like, man, Rich, if we would have kept you, we probably would have made the playoffs. And it's like, thanks, dickhead. Yeah, hindsight's real 2020 when I'm sitting here freezing my butt off in this nor'easter in Milwaukee.
Hey, Milwaukee is great in the summertime.
Minnesota is not great during
in the summertime.
Place is great during the summertime, except
no, but it's really great. I mean, we have the lakes. We have a lot of good stuff in the summertime.
Good things happen. Yeah. Upper Midwest.
If you would have stuck around, you'd know.
I agree. It's just weird that your summertime lasts 6 weeks. That's the weird
part.
We can't help that. When it's snowing in April. No, it's what?
3 months. June, July, August.
That's right.
Two against one.
That's right.
Okay. Who's got worse weather, Milwaukee or Minnesota?
Minnesota, for sure.
Well, it's
You can't say this one city in Wisconsin and then say the entire state of Minnesota.
No, I don't. I don't.
Milwaukee is on the lake, like on the very, a great lake, very
I'm
large.
I'm familiar.
So the wind off the lake, very cold. It's like Chicago.
Milwaukee's colder than Cleveland. Milwaukee's colder than Cleveland. Mm. Yes, it is. I've been there 2 years.
But the fact that Minnesota has underground tunnels.
They're above ground, the Skyway.
Okay.
Yes.
Let you know.
I know, but I think that Minneapolis can be better than Milwaukee at times.
No, Minneapolis got more stuff going on.
Oh yeah.
Milwaukee from no, not weather-wise. Weather-wise,
Milwaukee wins.
Milwaukee wins.
Okay, I tried.
Stuff to do. Oh, Minneapolis wins 1,000.
Milwaukee
times.
Has grown a lot, though, I will say.
We're building up, bro.
Oh, don't build up me. We're don't. Building Cleveland's up. Building up. That place. Well, that
thank
place.
You, LeBron.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Because when LeBron wasn't there, that place was a ghost town.
I don't disagree with
so
you.
So thank you, LeBron, for that.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, thank the Cavs and the Indians. Thank the Cavs and the Indians.
No, I said when he first came back. Like,
yeah. But I'm saying the Indians go to the World Series. They win 22 in a row.
But that was after LeBron came back.
That had nothing to do with the Indians.
It all comes together. It all comes full circle.
All right. Well, speaking of full circle, man, I appreciate you, man, coming on and telling your story about your brother and your journey to try and get boys. You know, but as much as I joke with you, right? Like, life is so weird. Life is so strange. And your brother had just had a boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? He had, you know, a nine-year-old son. So like, you have two boys now that is your responsibility to help raise.
That I do.
You know, and that's, you know, there's always, you know, you got to try and find things that can give you that kind of focus and I don't want to say a perfect because you have three beautiful girls, but you know, you do have two boys now.
I do.
You know,
I do.
And you know, I don't know of a better person, you know, to give you a compliment, you know, because I know how much you wanted to go to some boy baseball games. I know how much you wanted to go
I
to.
I still go. I just take my girls.
No,
I just take my girls.
Know what I mean. Like, look,
they're not watching the game.
They're not watching the game. But that's the thing. And so, you know, I know that's a special thing for you. So, you know, I applaud you again for the way you handled things because you were truly a professional when it came to, you know, just, you know, trying to get back to the core and trying to do that. Again, I saw with Channing Frye losing both of his parents in like a 6-week span,
mm-hmm.
right? Just like, hey, I just need to get back to basketball. Let me play this basketball. Don't check on me every 15 minutes. There's going to be some days I'm grumpy and exactly. I just don't want to fuck with anybody.
Yeah.
But more times than not, this is my sanctuary. So thank you for coming on and telling your story.
I have one more question.
You tell him, Katie.
I have to ask this because you played for Bo Ryan. Do you or do you not think he looks like the Grinch?
Be honest now.
Bo has some similarities to the Grinch, yes. Especially when he gets angry and the wrinkles come in his forehead, for sure.
Was this known to you when you were in school, or was this something that is
no,
mean?
I think when you don't see it as much when, you know, he's in your face every day, but when you...
But that's when the wrinkles are in full force when he's in your face.
I know, but like, you're not really looking at him when he's yelling at you. You know, he's kind of like, yeah, coach, I got it. But as you remove it, you see him on TV, and you're like, oh, that's what they're talking about.
Especially around the holiday season.
And then when he turns really red when he yells, absolutely, yeah. Sorry, coach. Still love you.
You're a mean one, Mr. Wrench. All right. Well, for Richard Jefferson, Katie Wingy, and our guest, Devin Harris, say goodbye, Devin.
Bye, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you guys later.